Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. I'm glad Ken Delecki's here, too, because he's a very important member of our Brain Trust, has been now for several years. He's become one of my good friends. He's an outstanding member of the outstanding family-owned small business, the Kiplinger Editors, Kiplinger Washington Editors. He's deputy managing editor there. Ken Delecki, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Jim. Good to be back with you.
It's good to have you back, and especially today, Ken. And we're not going to get maudlin today, and we're not going to, you know, I might get a little tear up. I might tear up a little bit here, Ken. But I know that this month you're retiring from Kiplinger. I know you're not going to exactly, go on over to the old folks' home and get your shuffleboard.
Yeah, I hope
but,
not.
But no, you got a lot more productive years to go. But basically, you're retiring from the current position with Kiplinger, we're going to reflect on that in a little bit. But I just wanted to say congratulations on a great career.
Well, thank you, Jim. That's very nice of you. I appreciate it.
Well, and we've enjoyed having you as part of our Brain Trust, and I hope that just because you're retiring from Kiplinger doesn't mean that you're going to retire from our Brain Trust.
Well, I appreciate that. I know I won't. I would love to keep in touch with you and remain a part of your team.
We know where you live. we will find you.
And absolutely.
I even know where your grandchildren live. So
that's
so
right.
So whenever you're not at home, I know where you've gone, and so I'll find you. Don't worry about that. Ken, I do want to later in the hour, I want to give you some time to reflect on your career and some of the things you've seen. But let's get into the letter a little bit and talk about the economy. That's the top on the first page of the this week's Kiplinger letter, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And we talked about interest rates and how they're going to be affecting the economy. We think that, of course, rates are inching their way up, as you know. A quarter point at a time at this stage of the economic cycle. We think that by year end, banks will be charging their best customers about 7%. It's possible that the Fed could kick into a faster interest rate raise of as much as a half a point at a time, but
yeah.
that will only happen if they think the economy's getting a little too hot.
I know
right
that's
now,
possible.
It seems pretty good.
I know that's possible, but I don't see that. And I want to come back.
No,
to
well, we don't either. We don't think. But you know, it's a possibility, but not
right.
a probability at this point.
I want to come back and break down that 7% you were talking about for folks who might not understand. Folks, you've got. Two basic building blocks of that 7%. One is what the Fed calls the Fed funds rate, which Ken and Kiplinger are talking about, is that the Fed funds rate, which is now what about three?
About yeah, it'll
three,
go up to
three
about four percent.
And a half or so. It's three
yeah,
and a quarter to, or so. Something like that,
yeah.
I've forgotten.
That's
and so
what
it's
it is
gonna
now, right?
it's gonna go to four and prime. Is basically a 3% margin tacked on top of that, that banks charge as Ken said their best customers. So what he's saying when he says they're going to be charging 7%, he's saying that the Fed funds rate is going to be about 4, and you tack 3 on top of that, so that's 7. And Ken, to put that in perspective for small businesses, because we live in a world of prime plus,
mm-hmm.
that means that if the best customers are getting 7%, the ones that the banks are not so risky. They think we're pretty risky, and I know that hurts our feelings a little bit sometimes, folks, but that's just the way it is. And so we live in the world of prime plus, so if prime is 7, that means small business owners are going to be borrowing money at 8 and 9 and 10 and maybe even 11%.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the world we live in. It's not pretty sometimes. We've had several years of low interest rates, but you know, that's heading up a little bit, and that's going to have a cooling effect on the economy.
That's true.
Because remember, Ken, over half of the U.S. economy is private economy is created by small business.
Well, the Fed doesn't want to see the economy overheat, so that's and they're also restocking their ammunition, as you know, Jim. The rates have been quite low, and
historically,
so they have no wiggle room to lower them if need be. So they're kind of restocking while they can. And
they were able to do that. They were able to bring the prime rate down. I mean, the Fed funds rate down to 1%. Because they really were worried about the economy after the attacks of 9/11, after all the other things that were going on. And so they just basically had to make sure. And it was a good move, wasn't it? It actually helped to resurge the economy a little bit.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely, as did the tax cuts.
Mm-hmm.
The Fed would like to see an expansion in gross domestic product of about 3.5%, and we're flirting with possibly a little bit higher than that. As
we had 4.4 last year.
Yeah. So
that was a little bit hot, and so one of the things that my economists tell me, Ken, is that the Fed is probably going to try to keep Fed funds rate about a quarter to about a half a point, I should say, above the current inflation rate.
Uh-huh.
A lot of this will depend on inflation, won't it?
Yeah, we don't think inflation is going to be that much of a problem despite the higher commodity prices that we're seeing. Probably 2.5% this year, which is actually going to be a little lower than last year.
Right,
which we saw the big fuel run up prices. So
well, that's surprising that we've been able to hold inflation to that level with all of the, especially with the oil prices going up so
much. It really is. Yeah, productivity has helped quite a bit in that score, as you know.
Global productivity and globalization. A lot of people don't give globalization credit where credit is due. Globalization has helped to hold inflation down, hasn't it?
Well, it has. I mean, imports, have not only our foreign suppliers keeping prices down, but they provide tremendous competition, which makes our businesses more efficient. They just have to be more efficient to be competitive.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, another thing that's creating a little bit of inflation for the U.S. and not so much for other countries is the devaluation of our dollar, the weakening of our dollar against other currencies, isn't it?
Yeah, the dollar's been really weak, and it's not going to strengthen anytime soon. Of course, the flip side of that is it helps make our exports more attractive overseas because our goods are cheaper to buy.
That's a good thing. But I read a report the other day that said that oil prices are not as big of an increase. They're up, but they're not as big of an increase for other countries because of our dollar has weakened, and so that therefore it costs us more for our oil than other countries. Ken, stand by. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. Stay with us. We're back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're visiting with our good friend, Ken Dalecki, Deputy Managing Editor of the Kiplinger Washington Editors. And we're talking about what Kiplinger has to say about what's going on in the world these days. And, Ken, one of the things that you guys point out is that the economy is looking pretty decent for the rest of the year, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Overall, pretty healthy picture, and I think that's good news. And I just think, I'd like to see us get down below 4% growth in 2005 and carry that into 2006. I think somewhere in the threes, high threes, fours. That's a good solid growth, isn't it?
Yeah, our people think that's exactly where it's going to be. So you should be a happy camper this year.
Well, let's put this in perspective with some other old economies. As a group, Europe is going to be under 2% as they were last year.
Old Europe.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, new Europe is going to the new Europe is growing.
Yeah.
The former Soviet bloc countries are growing pretty well, and Japan continues to grow at 9%.
Well, as you know, they were in stagnation for an awful long time, so that's kind of overdue, and it's
but they're
it's,
still
it's,
not.
It's really good news.
they're still not a large economy in terms of global, you know, economies. They're still not that big, but they sure are growing. It's the fastest, Japan and India, fastest growing economies in the world.
Are you talking about China or?
China, I say Japan? I'm sorry.
You said Japan.
I meant India. I meant India. Thank you for correct. I meant China and India. No, Japan.
Yeah, right.
Japan's back in a depression. I mean, in a recession, I think.
They're just barely growing.
Thank you for correcting me. I meant India. India and China are the two really emerging economies. Ken, let's move over to page two and talk about some of the business costs that you guys identify there. One of them is that there will be no – you predicted. Now, this was last week. Folks,
right.
there was a vote. There were two votes, actually, on minimum wage this week. But last week, they put this letter together, and here's what Kiplinger said. No increase in the minimum wage this year. Ken, both votes failed this week. How did you know that?
Oh, we just have great people covering the Hill.
You got an incredible crystal ball there.
Well, that came up, as you know, as part of the bankruptcy bill. There were a couple of amendments. And, of course, there's freestanding legislation to do that as well. And obviously, if it didn't make it under the amendments to the bankruptcy bill, it won't make it on its own. So, you know the age-old arguments about raising the minimum wage.
If Joan were here, she'd say, Ken, don't get him started.
Okay. We'll take up the rest of the hour on that one.
Oh, boy, I can get on my soapbox about minimum wage, but I won't now. You'll be glad to know that I won't do that.
Okay.
But I was really happy to see that the Senate killed it, but there were two votes. There was a vote on the Democrats' proposal to raise it to all the way to $7.25 within a couple of years, and a vote on the Republicans' proposal to raise it to $6.15, I think, or $6.25, and failed.
$6.25, yeah.
Now, but what about the bankruptcy bill? Is it going to pass?
Oh yeah, with bankruptcy bills finally going to make it. I mean,
after 8 years,
yeah,
you know, Ken,
yeah.
That was the very first public policy issue that I reported on when I started the show in '97.
Uh huh.
The very first thing I had Bill McCollum from Florida, Congressman McCollum.
Uh-huh.
From Florida was on the show talking about that, as I remember, in December of '97, and here it is 8 years, you know, almost 8 years later, it's just now maybe making it through the works there.
I think it just shows how easy it is to block something, you know. I mean, there was a pretty strong consensus that something had to be done about the ease with which some people could take advantage of the bankruptcy laws.
Right.
And it's just taken so long to address them, and it's finally going to happen, though.
In another area of business costs, regarding shipping, Ken, on down on page two, you guys point out that there may be some new toll plazas sprouting up on highways across a number of states. Are these existing highways that are already paid for? They're going to put up new toll booths on?
Well, most of them will be on new superhighways, heavily traveled routes. And Texas, you know, has a very ambitious program to build highways all across the state, about 4,000 miles.
In
different directions. And they plan to fund that through tolls. Other states also will probably be erecting toll booths.
You guys actually mentioned several states here. California, Colorado, Florida, Illinois, Indiana, New Jersey, New York, and North Carolina are some of the states that you point out are going to be focusing on these things. So from a freight standpoint, from a shipping standpoint, not only will you have the expense maybe in some of these states coming up of the tolls, you'll also have the delay potential. You know, it takes a little longer to get through those things. Of course, they got the Easy Pass technology now that makes it a little faster, don't they?
Oh, it's really tremendous. And some of that technology makes it somewhat easier. Can make it a lot easier if it's applied. There's some advanced technology that you don't even have to slow down, you know, to have it deducted and
just whisk right through. But
here on the East Coast, you still have to go through a separate toll booth and go fairly slow. But out west, I know you can zip right through.
Right.
And that just makes so much sense.
It makes a lot of difference.
Amazing.
It sure does.
It hasn't, I just can't believe when I see people driving on the highways and not taking advantage of that technology.
Absolutely.
It's terrific.
Absolutely. Ken, stand by. We're going to take a quick break, folks. It's 29 after. Ken Dalecki is our friend. When we come back, Kiplinger reports on some new medicines that I want Ken to tell us about right after these messages. The show is brought to you by IBM and Office Depot.
He inspires small business.
We can teach these barbarians a lesson in Western methods and efficiency that will put them to shame.
He tells it like it is.
I realize how difficult it's going to be in this godforsaken place where you can't find what you need. And there's the challenge.
He's Jim Blasingame, the small business advocate.
With all due respect, sir, I believe this is going to be our finest hour.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much. Staying with us today. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. My website is www.jbsba.com. Ken DeLicke is our guest and our good friend. He's deputy managing editor at the Kiplinger Washington Editors. And Ken, we're talking about the most recent Kiplinger letter, and we're down to the part where we want to talk about some new medications that are on the horizon. You know, Ken, you know you're not a spring chicken when you're interested in new medicines that are coming out.
Well, you can also look at it from an investment point of view.
Well, that's true.
You know, some of the companies that are coming out with these things should probably make a lot of money on them.
Absolutely. So we got the first one we got is a new medicine for diabetes.
Yeah, really exciting. It's an inhaled form of insulin, which will make life a lot easier for people who suffer from even severe diabetes. This is probably about two years down the road.
Pfizer is one of the companies that's going to be making that.
Right, they're going to call this thing Exubra. And so that's pretty exciting.
Well, and actually, they mentioned some others here. Merck and Bristol-Myers Squibb are going to be some of the other companies. Also, there's one for insomnia, a new drug for insomnia by Pfizer and another company.
Mm-hmm. Indiplon, that thing that's called. There are treatments out there for it already, but it's a huge market. There's about almost $2 billion sales for drugs that treat insomnia. Hmm. So there's plenty of room in there for competition.
It's a terrible condition that people have when they get that. It's just really awful that they have that. The next one is one that I'm interested in, rheumatoid arthritis. You know, Ken, from my father, I inherited excellent blood pressure and rheumatoid and probably rheumatoid arthritis. I know I've got a little osteo probably in one knee, but I'm probably going to wind up with his rheumatoid arthritis. And you know what that means, don't you, Ken?
You're going to be taking a lot of medicine.
It means I'm going to live forever in constant pain. Excellent blood
well,
pressure with rheumatoid arthritis. So I'm interested in this medicine, and it's a Betacept, I guess, is the way to say it. Bristol-Myers Squibb.
Right. That should come out late this year, maybe early next.
All right. Well, they need to work on that because
it's a new type of drug. It's called a T cell co-stimulation modulators.
Yeah.
So how about that?
Yeah, I'm impressed.
Yeah.
Well, you know, some of these other medicines that they've got out there for this, the methotrexate is a pretty caustic medicine, and then they've got this intravenous medicine that they're taking now that works for some people, it doesn't work for other people, and I'd like to see them come up with something that'll be a little lower impact, and hopefully this Betacept will do that. Now, tell us about the next one.
You're part of about 1% of the world's population, which suffers from rheumatoid.
Yeah. Well, I think I'm just starting to get it. And I asked my father before he died. I said, Dad, when did you start feeling the effects of this? He said, when I was about your age. I said, thanks a lot. what's this next one here, Ken? I'm going to let you say the name of it.
Papilloma, it's to treat papilloma virus. Which
yeah, what is
a,
that?
Well, that's a precursor for cervical cancer, so it's a major affliction for women, and this is a new drug to address that, and it's...
Gardasil, they call it, from Merck.
Yeah. And so that should be pretty exciting.
Well, that's a serious disease that's afflicts a lot of women, and I hope that's a good one that works. And when will that be out, do you think?
Again, probably within 2 years.
We live in an exciting age, don't we, Ken, where
we
have these kinds of medicines?
Yeah, it's a blessing.
You know, I've heard some of the elderly folks that I know complain about the cost of medicines. And I understand. I don't blame them for being upset about how much things cost. But I also have to remind them about how much their life, the quality of life and their life has been extended because of those medicines.
Yeah.
And people have to realize that these companies have to be reimbursed for the R&D. I mean, they can work on these medicines for decades, can't they, before they actually come up with something that will pass the FDA?
Yeah, and it's a long, torturous process to get through.
They can have an awful lot of money invested in these things, and so it's you know, you can't blame them for getting their money, wanting to get their money back. It's just you just got to wait around till it becomes generic, I guess. Ken, we're going to take a quick break, folks. Ken, as I mentioned earlier, Ken Dalecki is retiring as deputy managing editor after over 30 years in Washington, D.C. as a reporter, as a journalist. And when we come back after these messages, I've asked Ken to sort of reflect on his career and how things have changed over the last 30 or so years. We're not going to let him go. We're not going to let him go out completely out to pasture. We're going to hang on to him over the next few years. But I didn't want him to think about to talk to us about that. And that's coming up right after these messages. 20 till. Stay with us.
I do believe in you. And I know.
We're back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. My website is www.jbsba.com. Hope you'll subscribe to my free newsletter when you get there. Thank you to all of you who've been subscribing this week and those of you who continue to subscribe, and especially to those of you who write nice notes and tell me how much what we send to you means to you and helps you in your business. That really means a lot to me, and I appreciate it very much. Ken Dalecki is our guest. As you know, he's deputy managing editor of the Kiplinger Editors for at least a few more days. Ken, when is the date?
A week, as we used to say in the Navy, a week and 1 week and a wake up.
Seven more days and a wake up, huh?
Yeah.
And so that's when you're going to officially retire as a full-time employee of Kiplinger, but you're going to continue on to contribute some, because we don't want to lose your contribution to the brain trust of the world, Ken. We don't want you to ride off into the sunset there.
No, I won't. I'm going to try to be a contributing editor for a while.
Well, we hope you will, and we're looking forward to you continue to contribute. But what I wanted you to do right now, Ken, is you told me once before that you came to Washington over 30 years ago, and I want you to kind of think back about in those days and reflect on the last 30 years as a reporter in Washington, D.C.
Oh, yeah, a couple of things come to mind, Jim. One thing is how much more open the government is today than it was back then.
Really?
You know, they used to write tax bills behind closed doors and
in the smoke-filled rooms.
Yeah, right. And you know, maybe it was better that way. It's hard to know. I wasn't inside those smoke-filled rooms, but it's hard to imagine that kind of thing happening today. Well, so the Freedom of Information Act, I think, has transformed the government, opened so much up. That's one trend that's obviously noticeable for somebody who's been around a long time. But on the other hand, in some ways things have gotten much tighter, and that is security. It's kind of sad to see what's happened in Washington. You used to be able to walk into virtually every government building and knock on any door, and those days are gone.
I wrote an article once called "The Tale of Two Cities," and I was in Washington a couple of years ago after 9/11, and I saw the barricades, which was your first view.
Yeah.
And then behind it were all these beautiful buildings. Washington has beautiful buildings. And I said, to me, Washington is two cities. It's a secure city, and it's also a beautiful city. But you got to look beyond the security to see the beauty.
It's really sad. I mean, in the old days, I used to drive, love to take people around at night and show them Washington at night. You could drive by all the, you know, the Capitol and the monuments, and then you could go into them. You go into the monuments and walk the grounds, and you can't do that anymore. It's you know, the Jersey barriers, and you can't get as close to things, at least not by car. You can still walk, but it's just not the way it was. It's very sad. That part's sad.
But what do you think it'll take to change that?
I don't know.
Change in our lifetime?
I'm not real optimistic about that. You know, I mean, if everything went if we had a reformation in overseas, maybe. But I don't know. I just don't. I think
maybe
the world's
technology
changed.
Could make it where we could detect people who are trying to converse. But anyway, go ahead.
Well, technology is another thing I wanted to mention. It's just amazing how that's changed with the internet, particularly. It seems like the dark ages. We used to mail stories out. We used to go to Western Union and file stories
file
by Western
reports.
Union. Yeah. And now, of course, that's, you know, everything's instant, and it's 24 hours a day, and that's just light years different from what it used to be. And there again, I'm not sure that's all good. You know, it gives you less time to ponder, and
that's what I was going to ask you. Is this a good thing? Do we have too much information these days, Ken?
Well, I don't know if we have too much. I think we have an awful lot for people to try to assimilate, and I think people sort through it and find reliable sources like the Kiplinger Letter and our other products, I like to think. But that's part of what this company has done for years, as you know, is take tons and tons of information and try to distill it to the essence and give people a quick read on the major. You know, the major issues of the day.
Well, obviously, you've enjoyed working for Kiplinger, or you wouldn't have been there for 20 years.
Well, that's true. It's been a great company to work for. It really has. The founder of our company, Willard Kiplinger, was a pioneer in journalism, but he was also a pioneer in running a great company, a very generous company to its employees. And you know, we all appreciate that. It's become a much more competitive world, and you know, things can't be probably as paternalistic as they used to be. But it's a great company.
Well, and then Austin. Well, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I was just going to say Austin. His son took over, and then now Knight, the third generation, is running the company.
That's right. Yeah, been three generations, and the genes have held up, fortunately.
You were going to say something else, Ken.
Yeah, the other big thing that you see here, from my perspective in Washington, because a lot of that time was spent covering Congress and politics, is the political realignment that's happened. When I first came here, you know, there were such things as liberal Republicans and conservative Democrats. And in fact, when I first met Trent Lott, who eventually became the majority leader in the Senate, Republican, he was a Democrat, and he was an aide to a Democratic congressman from Mississippi. But when he ran as a Republican, and that was at the very beginning of the changeover and realignment among Southern Democrats. So the parties have become much, much more partisan, but
they actually
stand for something, which I think is good.
I want Ken to continue to talk to us about his perspectives on the last 30 years. When we come back after these messages, we'll let him continue to talk right after these messages. Tim, stay with us. We'll be right back.
Some cheap sunglasses.
We're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're visiting with our good friend Ken Dalecki, Deputy Managing Editor of the Kiplinger Editors for at least one more week. Then he becomes a contributing editor. By the way, folks, I encourage you to check out Kiplinger's website at kiplinger.com, K-I-P-L-I-N-G-E-R. You can find all of their publications, the weekly Washington Letter, which is their flagship, the three biweekly letters, California, Tax, and Agriculture Letters. Those three are biweekly, and then the magazine, Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine. And Ken, you got that phone number that they can call?
I do. We have a toll-free number, 1-800-544-0155.
All right. Nobody gives that phone number out better than Ken, ladies and gentlemen.
You can access the subscription information at the website, too, of course.
Exactly. And don't forget the 30-day free trial. Ken, let's wrap up the hour. I want you to continue to reflect on you were telling me off the air a little bit about one of the new phenomenons since you've been in Washington, and that's the think tank explosion.
Yeah, you know, when I first came here, I think the main think tank in town was the Brookings Institution, and it's still here, and it's still a fine resource for public policy. But many others have popped up and developed.
Many, put a capital M on many.
Yeah,
like hundreds, maybe.
Yeah, and many of them are on the conservative side of things. The American Enterprise Institute, the Hudson Institute, the Hoover Institute,
Heritage
which is
Foundation.
Out in California, Heritage Foundation,
Cato. Well, Cato considers themselves more libertarian, but
that's right.
They're conservative as well.
Yeah, yeah, and that's
National Center for Policy Analysis. There's another one.
They're just an endless variety of them.
Mm-hmm.
I think, as I was telling you earlier, I think some of that was a reaction to the Great Society programs, the idea that the government could solve all our problems.
Statism.
Which was prevalent in the, particularly in the 60s and,
mm-hmm.
and the early
70s.
70s.
Yeah.
I think that there was a reaction to that, and it's certainly helped bring about that political realignment.
Do you think that's
about
another influence that Ronald Reagan had?
I think it started before Reagan, but he reflected it.
Think it goes back to Goldwater?
Yeah, it does. Although Goldwater, of course, considered a disaster for the
Republican
Party.
But Reagan basically, you know, Reagan is sort of like Henry Ford. Henry Ford didn't invent the mass production, but he did perfect it. So Reagan kind of perfected modern conservatism, didn't he?
Yeah.
And made it into a product that you could kick and hold and sell, actually.
And the political realignment, as I mentioned before, I think has been amazing. When I first came to town, Democrats had an iron rule over the House and Senate, and it looked like it would never change in my lifetime, and it did. And
do you think that the acrimony that we're seeing right now is, I believe it's, and I want your thoughts on this, that it's the results of Democrats not knowing how to be in the minority and Republicans not really knowing how to be in the majority?
I do. I think that's a very good point. It takes time to get used to being in the minority.
Yeah.
If you've been in the majority, you don't want to give up that power. It takes a long time to get used to.
It hurts their feelings, doesn't it?
Well, and you know, I must say, I remember when Bob Michael, who was the House Minority Leader, who was a wonderful guy, but I think in his heart he never really believed that Republicans could ever become a majority, and it took a maverick like Newt Gingrich to really believe it and help bring it about. So you know you can. It's probably good to fight for the majority, but it can be acrimonious. And if you're fighting for the wrong things, as far as the public goes, you become more of a minority. You don't get closer to being back in the majority.
Gene,
part of the competition of ideas.
I got 40 seconds. Last thoughts as you wrap up your visit with us today.
Well, I would do want to thank you, Jim, for inviting me to be your guest from time to time on the program. I do appreciate it. It's fun to talk to you, and I hope we'll see each other down the road.
Well, we will. And as I said, I know where you live. I know where your grandchildren live. So I know where to find you if I need you. And we will continue to call on you just because you're retiring. But I know that you won't be as available as you have been in the past. But for all the things that you've done for small businesses over the years, reporting on some important information, we thank you.
Thank you, Jim.
Ken DeLecky, ladies and gentlemen, deputy managing editor of the Kiplinger Letters and a great American. Thanks, Ken. I'll see you next time. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, because without your courage, hard work, and devotion to your dreams, America would not be the greatest entrepreneurial country in the world. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program really is for you. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.